April 16th.
Yes, it is.
And
happy Easter.
Yeah, happy Easter to those of you who celebrate Easter. and those of you who celebrate the transition into spring and things like that.
A lot of people celebrate that.
Yeah, this is the weekend.
This
for
is
us.
For that, absolutely. This and is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott Allen.
I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And we have an action-packed show for you this week, I think.
As
I hope.
Ooh,
I hope.
Wait, I want some dead air real quick.
What's up? What was that? I heard something, too.
Yeah, interesting.
Wonder what that was.
Don't remember. Don't remember. Don't
know.
Is there
anything playing? Is there anything playing or anything like that? I don't hear anything. No. All right, whatever. That's cool.
Okay. That's all right. That's good. Anyway, Bombshell.
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 I got this when you came in.
Bombshell. Bombshell.
Mm.
Last night. Driving
yeah.
home,
mm-hmm.
listening to Coast AM with Art Bell, of course, one of the pioneers and founders of talk radio.
You know, the paranormal type talk
paranormal
radio
type
shows.
Talk
yeah.
radio. Art Bell had taken a few weekends off for a change of scenery, and as we all know, his wife Ramona had passed away
not too long ago. Yeah.
Not too long ago, and turns out he was in the Philippines, in Malaysia somewhere, mm-hmm. and. Got married. So congratulations, Art.
Congratulations to Art Bell.
Yes,
on his new marriage. That's really cool.
Irene Ruiz Bell.
Is that what? That's her name?
Well, he calls her Aaron. But yeah, it's but it's Irene Ruiz Bell.
Okay.
The newest member of the
Bell family.
Extended the Bell family. And congratulations
to Art. Yeah,
she's an absolutely beautiful, beautiful, beautiful woman.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise to all of us, you know, here in radio land. But, okay, that's very cool. We're very happy
to
hear that.
Yeah, suddenly have a new Bell, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't, unexpected. And, you know, that's how Art is. That's how Art is, and I have to thank him for keeping it going.
Well, that's what's always made Art, you know, a top grade broadcaster, is because he is unpredictable like that, and that's what's always made him interesting to listen to.
Exactly.
And
if
his
life the show reflects his life, his life reflects the show.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all one and the same, mm-hmm. and when this kind of stuff happens, it's like, whoa, you know.
But then you go, look who we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, that makes total sense. Makes perfect sense.
So congratulations, Art. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Irene.
Totally awesome.
And excellent.
Yeah. Also, coming up a month from now, we're going to mention it again because we're really excited about this. It's like every week it's we're getting more and more excited about this, and that is the CPRI First Annual Paranormal Conference.
In Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, we're looking for, and we're going to be there, of course, in case you didn't know by now. Just in case you didn't know, we're going to be there.
Yes, we will. We're heading down to Richmond, Virginia. It's mm-hmm. May 13th and 14th.
Mm-hmm.
CPRI in Richmond, Virginia. Keynote speakers include Jason Haas from the sci-fi hit Ghost Hunters,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Sally Ryan Feather from the Ryan Institute,
mm-hmm.
and Doug and Scott L. of Ghostly Talk.
Yeah. Wow. Very last.
Well, we're not really keynote, but we are after the keynote speakers.
I don't know what keynote.
We're wedged between TAPS, you know, Jason and Grant.
And lunch.
And
isn't it lunch, I thought?
No, I think it's after lunch and before the workshops and classes on Sunday.
Well, I hope it isn't before lunch because we're going to have a real problem there, I think. I think people will be
saying, everyone will be like, where do you want to go for lunch?
Was that a question? No, that was my stomach grumbling. It wasn't nobody was talking. But that's coming up. God, it's less than a month now, just about.
I'm excited.
Less than a month. I'm really excited.
Absolutely
about this.
Excited. I can't wait to see Mark Nesbitt and
John Zaffis. Everybody's going to be there. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be totally cool. If you can get down there, come on down. Hang out with us. Hang out with everybody out there. It should be a pretty educational weekend for everyone. What else we got going on here? We got a ton of stuff going on, I think. We also have something on the phone, I think, too, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Well, do you want to do your admin stuff?
Well, I wonder, maybe he'll help out.
Maybe he will.
Maybe he'll.
Maybe
help
we'll.
Out.
Maybe we'll help. Like make him carry the rest of this segment, like until 6:30.
Let's do fill in the blank. Let's play some fill in the blank. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Ghostly Talk is broadcast from
the Haunted Warren Winery in beautiful Warren, Michigan.
Okay.
Whoa!
Very good.
And it's broadcast when?
Sunday nights, 5 p.m. Central.
That is true.
Okay, all right.
5 p.m. to 8 p.m.
You even took the
Central
time change
time.
Into account, so extra points for that.
Yes, yeah, you get extra points. Mm. And what else do we usually say? Oh, yes, and our...
What's our website?
What's our website?
http://www.ghostlytalk.com.
I'm sorry, you lost points for that. It was :// www.ghostlytalk.com. But that's okay.
Sorry. Bacardi's going to bed.
and then, of course, we're broadcast live on Sunday night.
Well, yeah, let's have we want to know what all of our affiliates are now.
We have a cheat sheet.
We have a cheat sheet.
What is the home of Ghostly Talk?
Pioneer Radio.
What's
at Rolo.pioneer.net.
Close. Pioneer.rolo.net.
Ooh.
Not bad. Not bad. Little dyslexia going on. And we're also...
Aren't you a sweetheart?
We're also proud, very proud, to be rebroadcast on the OmniSound Radio 1 network.
Yeah.
And OmniSound... What, Radio 1 dot... They're either .net. .net or .com.
Exactly. OmniSoundRadio 1.net.
Thank you. OmniSoundRadio 1.net. Mm-hmm. Radio New York International replays us. KWTF The Edge, the home of the classic metal show.
Thank you, Rob.
Don't forget the B-Zoo.
Oh, yes, B-Zoo, Homegrown Radio is in there.
I'm skipping ahead, man.
Riff Raff Radio, of course. The Point, 99.1 FM. The Butt... Broadcasting Group.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, the Robin Valley Community Radio.
Yeah, our friends out there in, what was that again? Why do we always forget where these guys are at?
Let's just say they're from Seattle, but they're not.
You're from Seattle.
They're from
Omaha, Nebraska.
Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay,
yes.
Duh.
Thank you.
Right.
That sounds good.
Sorry, Scott.
ADD Underground, that's Slackin' Radio, of course. Catnip Radio, Bloggin' Service, and Radio Enigma.
Thank you all for helping us out. We appreciate it.
Oh, definitely.
Very much. Now, Elmo.
Who's been helping us? Yes.
Well, who's been helping?
No problem.
Who's been helping us?
Yeah, there's like a fourth host here.
Well, yeah. Who has been helping us? Elmo.
Yeah. Elmo, thank you for helping us out with the intro.
Yeah, field
no
reporter
problem.
Elmo
no problem.
is on the air to talk to us about some of the stuff he's been working on. When we had our little impromptu testing session a couple weeks ago, Elmo hopped on and like helped us like test our levels and stuff like that, because we're kind of revamping the board and the whole system here. And he kind of gave us a precursor into what he was working on the next couple of weeks. Well, now he's going to be talking about some of the results. Am I correct, Elmo?
Yes, sir. I've been busy.
Well, tell us what's going on. Tell us what's happening.
Okay, well, let me see. I got several things for y'all tonight. Well, first, the news scene. I've solidified my group attendance and meetups and whatever into two divisions. We now have the Houston Area Paranormal Society for our meetup group.
Ooh, that's HAPS.
HAPS.
Yeah, exactly.
That's HAPS. I like
it's
that.
It's a direct ripoff from TAPS.
What bar were you guys in when you thought of that? No, I absolutely love it.
We had to get away from our old name because, for one, it was just too long and hard to remember.
Oh, it can't be as funny as...
Never
mind.
That was 2005. This is 2006.
Okay.
There was a copyright issue with the former owner of the group, so we got away from that. We're now known as the Houston Area Paranormal Society. That's our meetup group. And we now have a newly formed investigative group known as Pararap.
Pararap.
Try saying that five times fast. And it's actually, what do you call it, an anagram where it's the same spelled forwards or backwards?
Oh, okay. That is That is
anagram.
Is that an anagram? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the brainchild of our third organizer, Jules. She came up with that. It's got a real cool logo, forwards and backwards, kind of mirror image type thing. That's our residential investigative group, and we've already got two investigations under our belt. And let's see, the website for that is www.pararap.com.
Excellent.
Wow, you have been hard at work, Elmo.
Yeah, no kidding.
Good job.
We have. And, okay, I guess the second order of business is EVPs. I got a few EVPs for y'all.
Okay.
That's what I heard. You went out on investigations. So tell us, when, first of all, obviously the weather's a little bit better down there than it is up here.
Yeah, we're well into summertime now.
We're hanging on to just a little bit of chilliness.
Uh-huh.
We had a touch of gorgeous weather the other day, but then it ends up a little bit chilly. So we're not parading around through cemeteries quite yet, or, mm-hmm. or public haunted places like uh-huh. bridges and roads. Where were your investigations?
Okay, well, with Pararap, we had, let's see, one residential investigation. A lot of that. Well, that was complex, our first one, because it was actually aborted by the client midway through the investigation. It's kind of hard to explain, but we were starting to really debunk her case. And all of a sudden, her psychic sister in California sent us some emails telling us to stop and that the spirits there didn't want us to continue.
Oh,
so,
that sounds convenient.
Yeah, so we, well, the main thing about that, we were getting extremely high EMF levels in our house.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, somewhere in the neighborhood of 55 milligauss in the center of her house.
Mm-hmm.
So we more or less figured out that was an electrical problem, and it may have been affecting them psychologically. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about, exactly. And we've talked about, you know, we talked about that with Kay from Sight a little bit, is how electrical fields may actually affect the mind itself. And
it was so strong, it made my compass spin around in her kitchen.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, yeah. Well, we're still claiming that, you know, as an investigation, so that was our first.
Mm-hmm.
Second was a tour we did of Galveston. Let me see, when was that? Oh, last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We checked out an old apartment complex. This is the one that I've mentioned in the past.
Yeah.
With the extremely high mortality rate and
mm-hmm.
and other weird goings on there. We're in progress on that. We're going to go back for more before we make any, you know, real reports on it.
Okay.
Okay, so that's pretty much it so far. I mean, we're a fresh group. I think we formed this at the end of February, and we're still putting together a good team. Right now we're up to 5 members and getting the gear together.
I think you should stop it right there and keep it at 5 members myself. That's my advice to you.
Yeah, you know, you're right about that, too. A small group is much better for residential-type investigations.
Well, I have to say, when you think residential-type investigations,
mm-hmm.
You've got to think of who wrote all the books, 80 billion books.
Hans Holzer?
Hans Holzer.
Mm-hmm.
Hans Holzer, of course, even though I can't remember his name because I haven't had enough caffeine yet today, but I do remember his books, or at least, you know, as many as I've read. And he always kept a very, very small group. And when he would go in, it would be just 2 or 3 people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's I think that would be the best way to do it personally.
It really is. It really is. And we're saving the more public haunts for the meetup group, you know, to make for good meetups.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And that's about 20 to 30 people at any given event.
Mm.
And that's awesome. That is awesome. Because we don't have that here in Detroit.
No, we don't. Well, now,
speaking of events,
yeah.
Last Friday night we had our April meetup at the Battleship Texas.
Yeah, you mentioned this to us a couple weeks ago that you were going to be going there. And is that where these EVPs are from?
No.
Okay.
No. That was only last Friday night.
Okay.
And I still have like 270 minutes of audio to go through.
Okay.
I haven't really harvested anything from that yet. But
that anticipated segue just
totally blew it away.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm the anti-segue.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Almost playing anti-segue guy tonight. Yeah, but no.
Okay.
Where are these from then?
Okay, well, let's start with that. You've got 2 of them that are from a cemetery in the Montrose area of Houston. That's from last month.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest are from Galveston as of last weekend.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay.
Do you want to check these out?
Okay.
All right.
I don't know what order if he has them queued up in, but you could start with Elmo Noise. And I need to warn y'all before y'all play that.
Okay, there's not one that says Elmo Noise.
I have a feeling that we need to talk about if I view file info, it should tell us. Yeah.
Okay.
That tells us the name of it.
All right.
It
lives
Elmo
true
noise.
To its name because it is noise. See, I'm the proud owner of the Uri Geller laptop, one that was resurrected when he was on your show.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And that's really a Franken laptop. One of the times that I had it apart, I left off the cover on the sound card.
Mm-hmm.
And just for chuckles, I tried it out, and it still worked, but now it has, like, electronic noise, a lot of it, when you do a recording with it. And that's how I do a lot of my recordings, with a big mic plugged into the laptop. It's the whole white noise theory I wanted to try out to see if I could get anything with it. And I did get this. All it is a surge in the noise. It's no voice or anything. I'm saving the crappiest for first.
Okay.
Well, let's listen to it and see what it is.
Right.
You'll hear it.
Can he hear it one more
time? All right, give it a listen. Let's hear that again.
Was that it?
That was all we heard.
Some noise, yeah. Let's hear it one more time.
Yeah, it's kind of like a...
It sounds like it bumped up the level to
sounds like an electrical charge.
Yeah, it sounds like I amplified it in one part, but I didn't. That just came through on the
record. Oh, really?
Really? Oh, play that again. I do want to hear it.
That's pure digital noise right
there. There's some tapping in the background, too.
What's the tapping in the background?
Tapping?
Yeah.
That may be my chair squeaking.
But it's kind of like rhythmic, almost like Morse code in the background.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's one of the characteristics of its electronic noise.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of stuff happens throughout the entire recording, like however many hours or whatever you go through. But then that shift in the levels, though, was not...
Exactly.
Is not
out of,
characteristic.
Out of, out of like 30 minutes of recording, that was the only shift in level in the entire
kind
recording.
Weird. Hmm.
Interesting. Uh-huh. I wonder if... Well, I'll keep that in mind. Maybe we can watch for stuff like that in others, or maybe it'll give a subtle clue as to EVP
and
formation. You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
It might be a handy tip if you have an old laptop with a separate audio card inside.
Mm-hmm.
Try taking the shield off of it, and that'll give it a lot of electronic noise in the background.
And he might be able to
get worthless for making MP3s or anything. But
remember, everybody, experiment.
It's
exactly
what it is.
Experiment, experiment, experiment.
And that was the first of the two in the cemetery in the Montrose area of Houston. The second, I have to set this up for you a little bit. It was one of our meetup nights. I was supposed to meet Randy, my partner at the Paranormal Society. And I got there first, so I went ahead and started setting up. Now, the way I do this, I have a small cassette deck that I started, okay, and then I went like 8 feet away and fired up my laptop, okay? So I'm setting up the laptop, plugging in the mic, telling it, you know, doing my introduction, saying this is the cemetery in the Montrose. And when I played back the recording from the cassette, which, remember, was 8 feet away, I got this okay pop in the middle.
Okay.
And it's like it's somebody, I was all alone. And remember, at home, don't do this alone. Don't go to cemeteries alone in ghost hunt. I was there maybe 15 minutes early waiting to meet people, so I went ahead and started setting up. So.
All right. Let's give it a listen here real quick. Okay. We have that queued up, Will.
It is Elmo okay, correct?
Right, correct. Okay.
What's at the beginning? What's in the... I heard the okay, but what's the stuff in the beginning and the end?
Right, that's what I was saying. I was about 8 feet away setting up the recording on the laptop.
And you were chatting with yourself? Oh, you were testing levels.
Yeah, I was just introducing the recording. You know, this is the college. No, oops. This is the cemetery and the Montrose.
In the general Montrose area, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And the date, you know, and waiting on Randy and the rest of the group to arrive.
So that was your voice in the background.
Right.
About
8 feet
away. And then the okay in the middle is, we don't know what it is.
It's a whispered okay, am I correct?
Can we hear it again?
Let's do it again.
Yeah, and it's definitely different.
A.
It's okay.
It's clear. It comes right through. It's clear.
I don't detect any audible finagling with the file. This is directly off the capture.
Right, that was a cassette tape, and you know I try to run two recorders. You know, at least a cassette deck in my laptop or two cassette decks, and yeah. That blew my mind when I heard it.
Wow.
Do we have any other ones? Is there any other ones?
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
The one Mark Randy won.
Yeah, I got that one.
Okay, that was last weekend in Galveston in a West End cemetery. Randy wandered off with his voice recorder, and what you hear is him asking, is there anybody here, or would you give us a name? Would you like to talk with us? And then you hear a voice really faint in the background say, I would like to talk to you.
Let's give it a listen. See
that's
what we
Randy
hear.
One.
Okay.
Is there anyone here that would like to talk to us tonight?
That's some really bad wind, man.
Yeah, it's windy out
it's
there.
It's windy out
windy.
There. Let's give it another listen.
Is there anyone here that would like to talk to us tonight?
It kind of comes in before the wind really kicks in.
There's definitely a voice in there.
Yeah.
I imagine you can figure out what it says, and it probably says, you know, I'd like to talk to you, because it's about the right number of syllables.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not quite...
That wind is killing it. Yeah,
bad.
Yeah.
But you know what? I wonder if this was taken by Randy?
Yes. On his voice recorder, little MP3 recorder. And
How much experience does he have doing EVP?
You know, he's got quite a bit experience, really. He's been doing this for quite some time.
Because I'm wondering is if he gets responses like this, if they're not going to build up and get stronger and better and clearer and even overcome extraneous noise, because it sounds, I mean, it really tried. I mean, I do hear the voice.
Oh yeah.
So I wonder if it's going to build and he's going to become a super EVP getter. at least I hope so.
Well, yeah,
I know
yeah.
I'm not a super EVP getter.
Neither am I.
Oh, yeah.
But if Randy could, because that it's really in there and it sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've got one more. I've got three short versions of the same one.
Okay.
It's Randy again, same cemetery in Galveston. Yeah, there's wind. Let me see. How can I set this up? He was talking to us. We were just standing around chit-chatting with the recorders going. He was relating the story of the haunted Walmart in Galveston and to a couple of new members of the group. And in between his words, I heard a real high-pitched, garbled voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't make out what it says. But... At first, it sounded like a glitch in the tape, like a fast-forward tape glitch or something, but I got it with two different recorders.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one would be Randy 2 Long, and that's the long version of it, if you want to play that.
Yeah, we're giving it a look right now. Yeah,
and then after that is the short version of it.
Okay, yeah, we're setting it up right now.
Okay.
All right, here's a long one.
All right, let's play the long one. Hang on for 1 second.
And this
like
was,
18 moves?
Yeah, this is before they started staying open all night. And so they came in the next morning, the truck had completely unloaded and everything had been put on the shelf where it belonged. So they find trash bags, so they go in the back and they find trash bags hanging from the rafters that nobody threw up there.
Now, was there a child with you guys at all? There was
no.
There was no child there?
There was exactly four adults. And
okay.
We were all being really quiet while we were listening to them.
Because it's, and so obviously nobody heard this with your ears.
No. And that clunking you hear, that banging, that's just me closing my case.
Mm.
So it sounds like perhaps sobs.
Maybe.
Yeah. Or, you know that.
Yeah.
Only, you know. Very high.
And
good.
I have a shortened version if you want to play.
Yeah,
let's
play
the short one.
There's two other ones.
Randy Too Short.
Okay. Let me check the file info. Randy Too Compact. This is the other one then. Okay. I'm going to play it.
Randy Too Short.
Got it.
Okay.
Everything in the tunnel on the shelf where it belongs. So they find trash bags. So they go in the back and they'll find.
There's four syllables.
It sounds like Beaker behind you guys or something.
It sounds like it's trying to break in between Randy.
Well, yeah, it sounds like it's breaking in between his syllables, actually.
Uh-huh.
What's the compact one also, that other
okay,
file?
Now, like I said, I thought maybe this was a tape glitch or something. I actually got it with two recorders.
Mm-hmm.
The compact is the recording from my compact cassette deck. It's a full-size cassette deck that fits in my pocket, so I call it
compact. So it's a different recorder then?
Yes, and I can hear it faintly on that one, too.
Let's give this one a listen, too.
Okay.
Hello, everything is on the shelf where it belongs. So they find trash bags. So they go in the back, and they'll find trash bags hanging from the rafters.
You can hear it on there, too. It's a little, like you said, it's a little more faint.
It's more faint, but it is there.
Yeah, there's something definitely there.
So it sounds like it was audible, but you guys didn't hear it.
No, we did not hear it there, no.
Wow.
Weird.
Thank you.
It sounds like you've been very busy, Elmo.
Yes, I have been very busy. And, I mean, Friday night, we did the all-nighter on the battleship. How much time do I have?
Zero minutes.
Yeah, we gotta go.
Sorry.
Is that it?
Yeah,
is
unfortunately, we got to go to break, yeah.
But
no problem.
We
I'll
do want to hear about
next
that.
Time.
Yeah, well, yeah, say that for next time. We'll have you back
yes,
on
sir,
real soon.
I can.
And we'll talk more about that for sure. Well, thanks a lot, though, for coming on.
Yeah, thanks. This was
absolutely
fascinating.
Interesting
absolutely.
Stuff you've been working on. Interesting stuff you had to show us today. It's really cool. Thanks again for that.
Okay.
We appreciate it.
Elmo,
well,
you rock. Thank
Elmo,
you.
Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you later, man.
Cool.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
See ya.
Bye.
Always got something cool for us to check out.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a quick break, though, because coming up, we didn't have a lot of time in the first segment to talk about who we have on tonight.
But we do have Stephen Broad coming
on. Yeah, Broad coming on. We're going to be talking about some very interesting stuff. To be quite honest with you, I don't even know where it's going to go. And, like, per usual.
Well, I looked at the website, and it sounds like we're going to get schooled again. I love keeping my mind open.
This is what's making it fun, though, is we're getting a lot of people. We've been trying to get a lot of new guests on that present different viewpoints and things like that. And a lot of the stuff, we're just like, okay, come on here and we'll talk about it and we're going to learn from you. That's how we've been doing this thing forever. So that seems to be the formula that works. Why don't we take a quick break, though? After this, we're going to have Stephen Broad on here on Ghostly Talk.
This is Dr. Andrew Nichols with www.parapsychologylab.com. You're listening to Ghostly Talk Radio.
All these years I've spent Brian Hunwell with the Atlantic Paranormal Society, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk. So stay tuned and make sure you don't pull another one of those Dude Rudd episodes like I did.
And it's said that night that Jesus turned to his disciples and said, "One of you shall betray me." And Peter said, "Is it me, Jesus?" And Jesus said, "No, it is not you, Peter." And Simon said, "Is it me, Jesus?" And Jesus turned to Simon and said, "No, it is not you, Simon." And Judas said, "Is it me, Jesus?" And Jesus turned to him and went, "Me, he did."
Philosophy and former chair of the department. I already did it.
That was a big one too.
I'm gonna do it again.
All right, start again.
Stephen E. Browdy is a professor of philosophy and former chair of the department at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. He studied philosophy and English at Oberlin College and the University of London. And in 1971, he received his PhD in philosophy from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst.
After publishing a number of articles in the philosophy of language, temporal logic, and philosophy of time, he turned his attention to several related problems in the philosophy of science and the philosophy of the mind, in particular. Questions concerning causality,
causality.
Scientific explanation generally, and psychological explanations specifically. Wow. One of the overriding concerns was to demonstrate the inadequacy of mechanistic. Oh my God, I'm so destroying this today. Mechanistic theories.
We set ourselves up.
We did that.
It's
horrible. Steven is probably so far gone right now.
He's hung up.
Are you still there, Steven?
I am, but I just sound incredibly boring.
Oh, sorry.
Not at all.
Normally isn't too bad like that. We can usually get through something like that pretty good.
But you know what we did? We implant by talking with you before your segment.
On break, yeah.
When we were on break, we set ourselves up by, we planted that.
Oh yeah, I think we did. Sure. We just totally just flattened ourselves before we came back on the air. Steven, though, thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
This is obviously from what we slaughtered. I'll just say, you've done a lot of work, though, a lot of real deep work, I might add, too. What got you into working on such deep stuff like this as far as the philosophical aspects and whatnot? What got you into this type of thing?
What got me into philosophy, period?
Well, we can start with that, yeah. I mean,
what got me into the paranormal is something else.
That's what I want to hear about.
Okay, all right.
All right. Well, it happened. It had to do with something that happened when I was in graduate school. I was busy writing a dissertation on temporal logic, and I had never thought really anything about parapsychology at all. I fancied myself to be a kind of hard-nosed materialist, although I hadn't really thought about it much. It was just a kind of conceit I was carrying with me at the time. And it was a slow day in Northampton, Massachusetts. A couple friends came over. We'd seen the only movie in town, and they said, "Well, let's have a seance."
Mm-hmm.
And so for the next 3 hours, I watched my table rise in the air and spell out answers in response to questions. Now, you know, there's no way I can describe this so that I'd erase any questions, legitimate questions you might have, but I can tell you it was broad daylight, it was my table, my friends were not practical jokers, the table continued to rise. Even when one of us got up from the table, it would rise under our hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I should mention this, we weren't stoned at the time.
Well, that's one thing, you know.
This was the 60s?
Yeah, it was.
Not
so it's a real relevant consideration.
Yes, in that case. I interesting. Okay, that is called, or what you describe is called in the literature from the spiritualist movement as table tipping.
Table tipping.
Exactly.
So that's what you were doing. Now, had you ever seen table tipping done?
No, I knew nothing about it. My friends didn't know much about it either, because if they had, they would have used a better code for communicating with the entities who were allegedly communicating with us.
They didn't
know that, you know, you could make it nod twice for yes, three times for no, or something like that.
Yeah. Instead,
what they did, get a load of this, what they did, they had it nod once for A, twice for B, three for C, and so it took forever to get messages.
Oh, yeah, I gotta imagine it.
So he's spelling out Zimbabwe.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's over. You're there for like 3 days. It's
over. That's why it took 3 hours.
But
wow.
You said this was in broad daylight, too. That itself right there is a really interesting. Because a lot of times when they set up these type of things, when you have a seance or you have a medium come in, a lot of times, dim the lights, please. Let's dim the lights down. We need to get the mood set. But this was in broad daylight. So, I mean, it's very hard. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, the thing is, the whole, like, dim the lights and then things can go on.
That's all. And that in itself is a mental thing right there.
Have you read about the spiritualist movement? The kinds of things that they would do since you did that experiment?
Yeah, I've written at least one book about it.
Wow.
I
wonder if that's what I read. I bet it is. It very well could be. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that, first of all, that was a phenomena. First of all, from the late 1800s through, but it was more of a parlor phenomena. People would gather together. This is, you know, pre-internet, where people would talk to each other in person.
It was pre-television. I mean, people had to do something in the evening.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Television. I know there's actually going to be a lot of listeners who do not remember that television used to go off the air at a certain time.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Will, do you remember that? When TV would go off the air.
Oh, yeah.
You'd hear the national anthem.
Yep.
And that was it. You're done, man.
And that was it. Then you're like, okay, what are we going to do? You know. So, it became a, it was a parlor type phenomenon. And people would get together and they would sometimes, you know, they'd tell ghost stories. They'd tell interesting stories. They'd play cards. They would do table tipping and things like that. And this was just a thing that people did.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really talk about it then. You wouldn't go to work and, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people did, because there were a number of major mediums around and a lot of minor ones coming out of the woodwork.
Well, that is true.
Yeah, that is totally true.
Interesting.
Well, I think what Doug meant, though, is to a lot of circles, even today, unfortunately, they're talking about this sort of stuff, which is still a bit of a taboo thing. Even today, I think. Not in all circles.
It's getting better.
It's obviously getting a lot more exposure now. There's a lot more press and media on it. But there's certain demographic that goes, it's very taboo to mention stuff like that. I think that's what you were talking about, Doug.
Right. Table tipping is a physical phenomena, something of physical mediumship as opposed to mental mediumship.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's the kind of mediumship that interests me in particular, because it's easier to document.
And also sometimes easier to you have that fine line between mediumship and magic, and I don't mean magick.
I know.
I mean magic where, you know, sleight of the hand.
Oh yeah.
And there was indeed, like, Houdini, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was a magician, and he would go around and figure out how people were sometimes, unfortunately, doing tricks, you know, they were tricking, you know, the hand is quicker than the eye, and sometimes that's exactly what was going on, instead of actual physical phenomena. Yet, I read in these books, very, very studied books, that many people, these are, you know, high class, very well respected parties, you know, back in the, from the mid-1800s to the mid, or early 1900s,
mm-hmm.
who would go around the world seeking out physical mediums to do their things, and they report in their reports, and this is things like from the Warsaw Convention.
Yeah.
They would report on things like apportation,
right.
Completely unexpected, unexplained, and uncontrolled, unfortunately.
Mm.
but wait a minute. I mean, the best cases are the ones that are controlled, and that's why they're the best cases, and it turns out there are a lot of them, and the issue of magic, I think, really recedes to the background. There were lots of mediums who were investigated by magicians who knew the tricks of the trade.
Mm-hmm.
They made sure that the phenomena were not controlled by the mediums themselves, that the conditions of observation were good, And some of those cases are so spectacular that I think skepticism really doesn't have any place to gain a foothold.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I believe that, too. Now, you went from a person thinking about time theories,
right,
which is a lot bigger than, I mean, almost everyone has seen some episode of Star Trek that talks about time travel,
mm-hmm,
right? And so you think about it briefly for a few minutes, and it hurts your head. And, you know, there's the whole grandfather paradox thing, and then there's John Titor, and there's, you know, all these different things going on.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
and you're like,
you're
oh,
already giving me too much credit. I was thinking about such a small issue in the philosophy of time. I was writing for maybe six other people in the philosophical community.
But it would still hurt my head if I tried to think about it. So, but then, but you were very scientific in that matter. Right?
Yeah.
To table tipping in your parlor in
New England.
New
yeah.
England. And, wow, so you saw this with your physical eyes, and did it change your life or your views or both? How did that
well,
work?
Well, it scared the hell out of me, but I wasn't in any position to do anything about it. I knew if I mentioned it to my mentors, I'd be skewered.
Mm.
And I was enough of a pragmatist to realize that I first needed to get a PhD, I needed to get a job, and I needed to get tenure. So I put it out of mind until all that was done. I got myself a good job. I published some, I think, more than respectable mainstream stuff in these areas you've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I got tenure. And then with the alleged academic freedom that comes from having tenure, I decided if I was really an honest intellectual, I needed to be thinking about this experience that I had, and I needed to see whether there was anything worth sinking my philosophical teeth into. I knew that some major philosophers had given it serious thought before, and so I read what they had to say. And then I decided, well, this was something I wanted to look into also.
By major philosophers, you don't mean like Plato, do you?
No, I mean people like William James and some others whose names I don't know whether you'd know or not, but they're important
to philosophers. I'm familiar with William James.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Sure.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was talking about earlier about the philosophical aspect. Because, you know, that's what, obviously, in this field, Stephen, there is a lot of philosophy. There's a lot of theory. There's a lot of ideas and a lot of, I mean, that's what it's all based on. There's nothing hard we can put our feet on and expect not to fall through it. Because it's all pretty much theory right now.
What makes sense to you then? Because obviously a philosopher's thought about this stuff, right? What makes sense? Why was that table moving?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's really struck me when I look over the history of mediumship. I mean, what people usually ask me, and I think it's a reasonable question, is why did we see such spectacular phenomena roughly in this 80-year period from 1850 to 1930, and why do we not see stuff like that anymore? Some people think it all has to do with advancing technology, but I think that's nonsense. I think the reason is that the great mediums during this period were convinced spiritists. That is, they really believed that they were not producing the phenomena themselves. They believed that they were just vessels for disembodied spirits doing this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And psychologically, that takes them off the hook no matter what happens. Because if nothing of any interest happened, then they didn't have to feel that they had failed. They could always attribute the failure to an inept communicator or to a weak link with the spirit world. And even more important, if something dramatic happened, they didn't have to fear the extent of their own powers. They didn't have to think to themselves, holy crap, if I can do this during a seance, who knows what I might be doing when the seance is over, you know, unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what scares a lot of people about psychokinesis is that, you know, if you can move, say, a pencil a millimeter by thinking about it, it's a very small step conceptually from doing that to making somebody drop dead by thinking about it. And so I think the existence of any psychokinesis at all raises the specter for a lot of people of a kind of magical worldview that most of us associate, usually condescendingly, only with so-called primitive cultures. It's a worldview where thoughts can kill, they have other sorts of nasty consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And it means it's a world in which we might have to be responsible for a lot of things we just assume be bystanders for.
Well, that's
two things. First of all, you use the phrase raises the specter. I love that phrase. Can I borrow that if I ever write a book? And it actually is funny and makes a lot of sense. But the second thing, the Philip
yeah.
experiment.
Yeah. Good example.
That's where they took, if my understanding is correct, they took a whole bunch of just what these were, this was a college study of some kind.
No. This was done by the Toronto Society for Psychical Research.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I knew it was in Toronto. I thought it was the Toronto some college thing, but that's okay. Okay, so the Toronto Society for Psychical Research, they get together. But I thought it was a bunch of maybe college-age kids, at least.
No, it was just a general population. They were just adult professionals from a variety of different occupations.
Do you think they thought they could do what they set out to do? Or did you think they didn't even know what they set out to do?
No, I know what they thought they were up to. There had been some articles published in the early 70s by Ken Basildor and a guy named Brooke Smith about doing table levitations or table tiltings in groups. And what these guys were suggesting was that it was easier to do it in a group setting so long as, first of all, you kept the atmosphere very light, and so nobody would get too uptight about it. And because you were doing it in a group setting, no one had to deal with this fear of responsibility individually. They could always, in their own minds at least, attribute it to somebody else. And so they were having a lot of success. Now, what the Philip group thought they would do would be to invent a completely fictitious character called Philip. And they spent a lot of time giving him an entire life history, drawing pictures of him, surrounding themselves with artifacts that allegedly belonged to him. And they really immersed themselves in the story. And then they tried to hold a seance and get communications from Philip. And what they got were table wrappings and table tiltings. The table would sometimes completely turn over. And this was filmed by Toronto Television. And they consider this an example of psychokinesis by committee, because it was clear they weren't getting any communications from Philip, because Philip never existed.
Mm.
But they were doing it in the same kind of context that happened during the spiritualist movement from roughly 1850 to 1930. And so the significance of this for them was that it suggested that for all they knew and for all the spiritualists at the time might have known, they were not getting communications either, that this might have just been something cooked up unconsciously by the combined will or the individual will of somebody sitting around the table.
Okay, this is interesting as well, because we just talked about this. We just talked about poltergeist activity.
Mm-hmm.
And the contention is that if people could practice psychokinesis at will, right, if you could control it enough to practice it, that would be worse than inventing the death ray, or the neutron bombs, or not neutron bombs, those things.
Well, yeah,
phasers,
assuming nobody had their own PK defense.
Right, and interesting. Okay, what do you mean by PK defense?
Well, I mean, you know, there are parts of the world where people think you can do this at will, and they're not freaking out. They just assume that they have to go around with their own kind of psychokinetic shields.
Okay. Well, you hinted that earlier, and that's very interesting. Is that we did talk about that not too long ago, and that was a fascinating idea. That, well, our minds, and that's where we got into the whole idea where our minds might have a failsafe built into it right now, where we're not allowed to access this type of power. So to say.
Well, that was the contention on the show, right?
That was the idea. Yeah.
The contention was that we're not allowed by our own brains, by our own, not physical, maybe mental, we're not allowed to access this. Just like during sleep, you have sleep paralysis so that you can't act out your dreams and, you know, run into a wall or, you know, harm yourself.
You know why I don't believe that? Because we're self-destructive in all kinds of ways, and we're destructive toward others in all kinds of ways, even though you'd think we'd have some sort of mechanism against that, too. My concern is that a lot of this could be unconscious. And the way I think we need to look at this is we ask yourself, suppose people could be doing damage to themselves psychokinetically or damage to others psychokinetically. How would this actually manifest in life? First of all, it wouldn't be in our interest for it to be conspicuous, at least not in the Western industrialized cultures, okay? Because it just doesn't fit in very smoothly with our overall worldview.
Mm-hmm.
But it might manifest in, you know, unusual strings of good luck or bad luck. I think it would be really interesting to look at people who are astoundingly unlucky. There's even a Yiddish word for this. You know, schlamazels?
Schlamazels?
Distinction between schlamiel and a schlamazel. A schlamiel is someone who spills soup on himself.
Mm.
A schlamazel has it spilled on him.
Okay.
Yeah. So a schlamazel is somebody who is like a victim of impersonal forces or an unlucky soul. You know, somebody who's just having nothing but bad luck. And they really exist. I mean, I lived next door to a pair of schlemazels a number of years ago.
Mm.
And it would be interesting to know if they were schlemazels before they met and got married, but there's no way to know that now. But in any case, there's no doubt that their life was a living hell of aggravations and annoyances. I mean, like, everything they bought was defective. Electronic equipment would fail to work right out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Their cars were always in the shop, even though they both had Hondas.
Mm-hmm.
A solid wooden rocking chair broke in the first days they owned it with their infant sitting on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and my favorite example of their schlemazelness, if this is even a word, the wife bought a poster-sized picture of what she thought was the Golden Gate Bridge, and she had it framed and put on her living room wall. And she called me over to see it, and I had to tell her, that's not the Golden Gate Bridge. That's the Brooklyn Bridge. I mean,
oh, my gosh, she actually bought the Brooklyn Bridge.
I mean,
oh, my God.
That is the penultimate of schlemazelness. What did they do? Did you end up just moving? I mean, do you hear from them?
No, I eventually moved. But, you know, see, for all we know, this could have been something they were doing to themselves, just as we can make ourselves sick or, you know, keep getting involved in the same kinds of lethal relationships over and over. And, you know, these aren't things we do consciously. So if psychokinesis is manifesting in a day-to-day way, and if it's something we can trigger unconsciously, I suspect this is the kind of way it's going to show up.
See, that's where I'm trying to understand the difference between, as far as, because you brought up a very interesting thing. We're going to go to break here in a second, but you brought up a very interesting idea that there is this self-destructive nature of man. And I'm wondering, like you said, this it seems like coming from you, this is more done it's done unconsciously.
Well, here's the thing that I have, and this is what I'd like to ask because of the philosopher in you, Stephen. Because I think our bodies do have a lot of natural defenses. Obviously, you've got white blood cells, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do have sleep paralysis. That's
right.
A fact. You know, whether it's there for what we think it's there for, I don't know. But, you know, to stop you from punching yourself or whatever. You know, we don't know why it's put in there, but it is there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got these defenses and a certain amount of automatic defenses. And you've got mental defenses as well. I mean, people do indeed push extremely traumatic events to the back of their whatever and wrap them up and then completely forget about them until, you know, some breakdown or something or breakthrough in some people's cases. But, okay, so you've got these mental defenses, you've got these physical defenses. Perhaps the thing about the psychokinetic defense, if there is one, the PK defense, if there is one, is that how can I put this? This is so scary. what if your defenses like that can only function automatically and you can't have control over them? Because there is, and I don't want to get into a huge discussion about free will.
Mm-hmm.
What if we all have free will, right?
Okay.
So our consciousness can you know, pretty much, you know, when we're conscious, when we know we want to do something, and we can do something, because of free will.
Yeah.
We go and we do this stuff, right? But what if we just simply, there's some kind of law of the universe that says, oh, you can have your free will, but you can't access the PK part of you, at least at will.
Yeah.
You have to act. If it gets accessed, it's a fluke of nature. You know, it's just you know, oops, that happened. You know, just like you know, things happen. But
yeah.
I don't know. I just wonder if free will is a part of that conversation. Why we're not able to
psychokinetically do things on our own
all the time.
Yeah, it is a very confusing thing. Why don't we take a quick break, though? Okay?
And I'm confused about it myself.
Yeah,
so that's why I can't explain it very well. So let's go to break. I'm going to get my thoughts together.
Let's take a quick break.
Fascinating stuff. It's amazing.
This is way out there. It's very interesting. I want to get more into it. Let's take a quick break, though. I want to get my thoughts together. So I'm kind of sitting here going, you guys are going back and forth. I'm kind of going, I'm kind of floating around like in the background between you guys. Let's take a quick break. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
We'll be right back after this.